Welcome to Merkwood Design's Adventures in Creativity. I'm your host, Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zeroff, and this is podcast number 7. This series also has an accompanying website with show notes, links, patterns, and projects. Just head over to merkwooddesigns.com. That's MIRKWOODDESIGNS.com. Today's bumper music is the traditional Christmas song, The Coventry Carol, which dates back to the 16th century. It was performed in Coventry, England, as part of a mystery play called The Pageant of the Shearmen and Tailors. The play depicts the Christmas story from chapter 2 in the Gospel of Matthew. The lyrics of this haunting carol represent a mother's lament for her doomed child, and it's the only carol that has survived from this play. Well, today I'm kind of going to do some things a little bit differently. I usually work pretty much with an actual script. I'm not really good at talking off the cuff, but let's give it a try today. As you know, if you've followed my podcast, you know that I've been struggling with a cold for the past 2 weeks. I attribute it to shaking too many hands and hugging too many people at the funeral of a friend of my dad's. It was people I hadn't seen for some of them for 40 years. I used to sing at the church where my parents, where I grew up, and I played guitar, and I was the soloist from when I was quite young. And so a lot of people, a lot of kids who grew up in the parish remember me as being their same age, and consequently, that's how I ended up singing for this funeral. A young man had remembered me from probably about 35 years ago, and he found me, believe it or not, on Facebook. So Facebook has some good uses. And he got in touch with me and asked me to sing for his father's funeral. And I do remember him, and I remember his dad and his whole family. And it was such an honor to sing for the funeral, but I'm pretty sure that's where I caught my cold. And I was down and out for a couple weeks. I had a terrible cough, and I had no voice for a period of time. I'm still struggling with that. But I did get a chance to record my song for the grab bag segment today, which is an actual song I'll be singing. And so you can make up your mind whether or not I have a voice back yet. On my blog, I have this picture that I took last year of Teddy's cat Isis in front of the Christmas tree. And her eyes are glowing. You know the way cats' eyes glow when they have just a little bit of light. And her eyes glow green, used to glow green. Isis is no longer with us. She died this past year of kidney failure. But the picture shows that her eyes are glowing green. I did not enhance the photo at all. I did not change the colors. This is the actual photo. And I'm just so charmed by this picture because her eyeballs look exactly the same color as the green lights on the Christmas tree. So I hope you get a chance to take a look at little Isis. And last podcast, I said I had hoped that I would be able to report back that not only did I finally have inspiration for my Christmas cards, but that they were done. And indeed, my Christmas cards have all been mailed. I'm so proud of that fact because last podcast, just over 2 weeks ago, I had no clue what I was going to do. Now, since that time, I did post pictures on my blog of my Christmas card. And I'll tell you a little bit about the inspiration. I saw a quilt a couple of years ago that was just beautiful. It was, I guess, a laser-cut silhouette in black fabric, and you would buy this already pre-cut black fabric silhouette of the nativity scene, and you would, it had, what's it called? You know, like steam a seam too, a fusible web adhered to it, and then you would find a beautiful piece of batik or hand-dyed fabric that sort of looked like the night sky or sunset, and you would iron the black silhouette to your background fabric, and you'd end up with this really beautiful, effective, it looked like a silhouette with a sky in the background. So that was the actual inspiration for my card. The silhouette that I used, I believe I got from a website called Clip Art Today. It's a service that I've paid for several years. It's kind of pricey, but I've done graphic design for as long as I can remember, and I've had a membership to, it used to be called Art Today, and now it's called clipart.com. And so I subscribed to their service, and I remember I just typed in Christmas silhouette, or maybe it was nativity silhouette, and a number of them came up, and I grabbed one I rather liked. And I think it might have been a PNG file, which meant that the background was actually transparent, and I could overlay that image on another background. And so what I did was I found an actual photograph of a sky that I thought was so beautiful. I enhanced the colors a little bit, and then I laid the black silhouette on top of the background sky. And I combined the two images digitally, and then I printed them out on photo paper. I got the best deal a couple of years ago at Staples Office Supply Store. Every once in a while, I'll go there and I'll look in their markdown section. And they had boxes of photo paper, their own brand. And it's called, I'm looking at one right now, it's called Photo Supreme High Gloss. And let me see, I think that, I normally don't like to move away from the microphone. There are 200 sheets in the box. And normally it was, I wish I could peel the price back to look at the actual price. Oh, here we go. $35 for this box. And I got the box for $7.50. I didn't buy only one box and not two. I bought 10 boxes of this Staples Photo Supreme High Gloss. And it says, for cherished memories, our best paper gives you fast drying photos that shine. And indeed, these photos shine. They were just beautiful. And, you know, I think it was a pretty good investment because not only can I use it to print my photos, but I can also use it for projects like this. So, hey, some advice. Go to your office supply stores and check out their markdown section. I don't understand why this photo paper was marked down. There's nothing wrong with it. So, like I said, I bought 10 boxes of this for $7.50 a box. It's a deal. So, my Christmas cards are mailed and I'm all happy. I also got a lot of cookie baking done. My sister-in-law, Michelle, is hosting our family Christmas this year. And her family, and it's early, it's going to be the 20th. So her family normally comes into town the week after. All of she's the mom of six kids. And her kids all come into town the week after, or the week right before Christmas. And that's when she does her cookie baking. So she asked if I would make cookies for the family gathering on the 20th. And I baked, let me see, I made the koulourakia, you know, the Greek sesame twist cookies. I made seven layer torts. I made mini pecan pies, which are just adorable. I baked snowball cookies, and that's the recipe that I'll be offering in this podcast. Oh, what else? Oh, I still have to do my Christmas cutouts. And I know there was one that was a total accident. Actually, they were supposed to be almond spritz cookies. You know, the kind where you make the soft dough and you put it in the little gun and you use a little template thing and it presses the cookies on your cookie sheets. Well, for whatever reason, my dough did not want to spritz this time around. So I ended up taking the dough and rolling it out. And I used tiny star cookie cutters because they were going to be stars anyway, because I had already used yellow food color in them. So I just used tiny star cookie cutters, and I made a bunch of almond-flavored little cutout cookies, and they taste pretty good, and they look great. So it was an accident that turned out pretty well. And let's see, next on my list, I'm going to talk about family Christmas celebrations. I am blessed to have family from my side. At least my brother and his wife and my sister-in-law and her husband live fairly close, and so we get together usually Christmas Day, as far as I can remember, but maybe I'm wrong about that. But this year, because people are out of town, we're celebrating on the 20th, as I mentioned. And this is just a big, huge potluck. Everybody brings whatever they're really good at bringing, and that they, my sister-in-law, whoever is the host, provides the main course. If it's my sister-in-law, Barb, she always has ham, and sometimes she'll have a pork roast in addition, and also a turkey or whatever. Now, Michelle's doing something a little bit different this year. She's making lasagna, and that sounds really, really good to me, because don't you get kind of tired of going from party to party at Christmas time or even at Thanksgiving, and everybody always has the same thing, you know, a ham or maybe a turkey? So a lasagna just sounds delicious to me. So I'm going to be making an Italian vegetable dish and also the cookies that I mentioned. Now, my husband comes from a Polish family, and they celebrate the traditional Polish, I'm going to get it wrong, I think it's called Vigilia, which is the word vigil in Polish, and it's always celebrated on Christmas Eve. Now, my father-in-law doesn't, he used to really go all out. He's the cook in the family, and he used to provide roast beef and ham and ribs and just so many things you couldn't believe. You'd go there and there'd be just piles and piles of food. Well, we've kind of pared it down now, and because my father-in-law is getting on in years, we have it hosted at someone else's house. This year it is at my sister-in-law Mary's house, and everybody brings a dish. It's like a potluck too, but I was asked to make Polish borscht, which is one of my favorite recipes that Pops used to make. It's not your traditional beet borscht. It's more of a pickle-based soup, so it's a little bit sweet and sour, and it's just delicious. And sometime down the road, I'll provide the recipe for that, maybe closer to Easter, because we also have that at Easter time. And everybody else brings whatever they are really good at. I'll also be taking appetizers. So I'm so blessed to have not only pieces of my family here in town, but also my husband's family. I feel bad when people have their family so far away that they have no one to celebrate with at the holidays, and I get to celebrate twice. Plus, my own little family of my husband and my son will have our own celebration. And I think for that, I'm going to be making lamb, but I haven't quite decided. I think my husband has talked me into it, though. And one last thing. I want to talk about, before I talk about my knitting and crocheting update, I retired from electronic data systems 2 years ago, actually 2 years ago this very month. I'm not that old. I took an early retirement because we were really cutting back on employees and jobs were being outsourced. My job was outsourced to India. And as a result, I saw the writing on the wall. And as soon as retirement was offered to me, even though I was only 52 at the time, I took the chance. And I'm glad I did, because things are kind of not the same there anymore. But anyway, I was with Electronic Data Systems for 22 years, and because I was there so long, I got a really nice retirement gift in addition to a nice, you know, financial package. Otherwise, I wouldn't have retired. I received a Howard Miller carriage clock. Now, Howard Miller is a Michigan-based company, and their clocks are high-end. They make everything from little small clocks up to huge grandfather clocks. As a matter of fact, there was a bequest to my son's fraternity of the top of the line Howard Miller grandfather clock, which runs for about $25,000, and it sits in the great room of my son's fraternity house in Ann Arbor. And his fraternity house looks just like a castle. I swear to you, my son's room is actually in one of the turrets. But this clock sits in the great room of this castle house, and it chimes so beautifully. Well, my little carriage clock chimes too. It is not digital. It is an actual wound clock with actual bell chimes, and it has three different chimes. It has St. Michael's, Westminster, and I can't remember the third chime. But my clock stopped a couple weeks ago, and I was despondent because I love this clock. It's beautiful to look at. It's a beautiful piece of machinery, and the chimes are lovely to listen to. And so I was really sad. So I contacted Howard Miller, and I looked for, I wanted to get a suggestion for a local repair person. Indeed, I found a guy in Ypsilanti, and he did a fantastic job with my clock. He was so kind and so careful with it, and he talked lovingly about it, and he actually delivered my clock back to my house. I didn't even have to go pick it up. And the price to get it fixed was dirt cheap, in my opinion. You know, when you find somebody like that, a repair person, you need to let not only them know what a good job they did, but I plan to write a letter to Howard Miller and tell them what a great job this guy did. He was just such a nice guy, did a great job for a really great price. And I'm so thankful I have my little clock back on, well, I would say my mantle, but it doesn't fit on my mantle, but it sits in my living room in a place of honor. Okay, so let's talk about my knitting and crocheting. As you know, when I began my podcasts back in September, I did not know how to knit and I did not know how to crochet. It was pretty sad that here I had a podcast with a segment called Fiber Arts, and I didn't do either of those things, which are very traditional fiber arts. And my sister shamed me. She said, you know, Ruthann, you really need to offer something in the way of knitting or crocheting. You need to learn how to do that. Well, I did start. My friend Kathy and I went on a crafting adventure, if you recall, and we went into a yarn store, and I asked the salesperson for the most basic book for crocheting. I decided to try crocheting for whatever reason first. I had negative experience with knitting years ago, so I figured maybe I'd give crochet a try. So she showed me a book. I bought the supplies. My girlfriend Kathy let me borrow one of her crochet hooks, and I went home. And very quickly, I did crochet my first scarf, and I was very pleased with the way it turned out. Well, that gave me enough courage to begin to crochet a little bit more, a little bit more. I've made a hat, and I've made ear warmers that I actually designed myself that I'm very proud of. And I set myself a goal that I was going to make crocheted scarves for everyone for Christmas. Well, then I actually discovered a yarn store up in Ann Arbor, and I thought, well, you know, I might just give knitting a second chance. So I bought yarn, and I bought knitting needles, and indeed, I have learned to knit. Well, I set myself this goal to make 9 scarves and a shawl for my mother-in-law for Christmas. And this was starting in November, I think, I actually began this project. This is 9 full-size scarves and this shawl. Well, the shawl may not get finished, but at least it started. But believe it or not, I have 8 of my scarves done, also an ear warmer to match my son's scarf. And my husband's scarf is half done. And if you look at my website, you will see pictures of all of the scarves and actually of the shawl and my husband's scarf in progress. Now, I've gotten a lot farther on my husband's scarf since this picture was taken, but from left to right, if you look at the picture, my son Teddy's scarf is khaki wool crocheted scarf, and also there's ear warmers that match. My goddaughter Jessica is a cerulean cotton and acrylic knitted scarf in the seafoam pattern with beaded fringe. I love this scarf. I hope she doesn't like it so I can take it back. Next is my father-in-law's oatmeal Peruvian wool crocheted scarf. And then there is Zoe's lime green wool crocheted scarf in the circle and square pattern, which I love. That's my very favorite color, and I love the way the scarf turned out. And then after that is Ivy's, my niece Ivy. Hers is Japanese cotton silk wool and nylon, and it's crocheted. And then there is my niece Jacqueline. We have a lot of nieces. My niece Jacqueline's is pink wool and acrylic knitted scarf, also in the seafoam pattern. And then I used novelty yarn as the fringe, and it came out so nicely. After that is my niece Angela's, which is green wool and acrylic crocheted in the mesh pattern. And also I used novelty yarn as the fringe. And then my brother-in-law Art gets a black wool and acrylic crocheted scarf. Art is Teddy's godfather, so that's why I made him a scarf. And then you can see laying across the beginning of my mother-in-law's pink acrylic unfinished shawl, and that is in crocheted in the ripple pattern. It's incredibly easy, and I think because of that fact, I'll probably get it done by Christmas. I sure hope I do. And then finally, you can see the beginning of my husband's red wool scarf, which is also crocheted, and I'm half done with that scarf now, and I'll have the rest of it done tomorrow, I'm sure. That pattern goes really quickly, and I really like it a lot. I think that's the pattern I used most for all of my scarves. Well, guess what? I'm not offering an Alice in Wonderland red work pattern this time around. I decided to give poor Alice a break. And instead, I designed a special Christmas red work pattern. This is a Christmas angel with the words Gloria in Excelsis Deo. And of course, you can omit the words if you don't care for them. But if you look, there's a picture on the website, and you can download the free pattern. So that's the angel red work Christmas pattern. Stay tuned for the fiber art segment. Today, I'm sharing my bejeweled Christmas tree wall quilt hanging. Welcome back. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and you're listening to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. In today's fiber arts segment, I'm going to share my bedazzled Christmas tree quilt wall hanging. This is the perfect project for using random beads from your jewelry stash, broken necklaces, whatever. I don't know about you, but I have boxes of beads, chains, findings, etc. You know, I just remembered a craft project that my Aunt Edna, that's my mom's eldest sister, made. Over the years, she had collected all sorts of broken jewelry, and she was very creative. So she had all of these earrings, necklaces, you name it. And some of this stuff was actually vintage, from probably very early in the 20th century. And it wasn't cheap stuff either. And so what she did was she used these beads and jewels, and she made this magnificent Christmas tree. And it was on a black velvet background and framed in one of those really ornate carved frames. You know, I wonder whatever happened to that picture. I hope that whoever ended up with it appreciates it, because I always remember how beautiful it was. And, you know, I hope someone who appreciates the workmanship has it. I'm worried it may have gotten lost in the shuffle. Who knows what happens to people's things. She didn't have any children, so I'm not quite sure who would have ended up with it. Okay, so I really threw this project together quickly. I actually had another fiber arts project planned, but a couple nights ago I woke up in the middle of the night. Actually, that's why the podcast was delayed an extra day, besides my voice. I woke up in the middle of the night and I said, jeweled Christmas tree. That's perfect for Christmas. And I thought I wanted to offer something that people could make really quickly as a last minute gift, but that didn't look like you just threw it together. And I guarantee if you give this project a try, I hope you have most of the supplies on hand. Even if you don't, you probably have things that you could use in place of what I suggest in the project. You can make something so effective. You can use beads from your collection, sequins, crystals, pieces of jewelry, chain, to decorate your Christmas tree. Now, I promise I'm not going to edit this podcast, so you're getting the way I really talk. I'm not going to be using a script for the whole thing. This is it. I hope you bear with me. Okay, so anyway, this is also the perfect size of wall hanging to donate to Amy Sims' Alzheimer's Art Quilt Initiative. I'm going to put a link to that project on my website. Check it out. The reason that she calls these priority quilts is because they fit. The quilt has to be able to fit flat, unfolded, in a priority mailing box in the United States. That's that measures 9 inches by 12 inches, I believe. So this quilt is smaller than that. It's about 8 by 10 when it's done. So you could make these and donate them to the Alzheimer's Art Quilt Initiative, and I guarantee they would probably fetch a pretty sum, because they're pretty. It's pretty spectacular little quilt when it's all done. I hope you might consider doing that. Even if you don't do the Christmas tree, check out the website, which is www.alzquilts.org. The link will be on my website. And see what they're doing. They have an auction regularly of the quilts that people donate. And you'd be surprised at the amount of money people will be willing to pay for these cute little art quilts. There's a link on my website to the bejeweled Christmas tree wall hanging project sheet, and there's also process photos of how I went about putting it together, including Steam-A-Seam 2, which is a product that I buy by the roll. I think I've mentioned it before. I think at the Meowing at the Moon quilt we talked about that. I buy it by the roll, and it's really handy to have around, especially if you do these little art quilts or if you do a lot of applique. I used raw edge applique when I put this together because I wanted it to be really fast. So I just fused my pieces to my backing. I put the sandwich together, and I used my machine to free motion quilt. You could also obviously hand quilt. And the background of my tree, I used kind of a swirling, spirally kind of feel to make it look like a swirling snow. And then the tree itself, I didn't do any quilting on at all. I stitched all the way around the edge of the tree and the gifts under the tree to make them kind of pop out a little bit. But I didn't quilt on the tree because I knew I was going to be embellishing with jewels. And I thought that that would work out really well. And then after you make your sandwich and you quilt it and you trim it, then you bind it, And I just used some white binding I had in a drawer from I think a costume or something I made. I didn't even make binding. I didn't go to the store and buy it. I wanted this to be something I could throw together really quickly. And it looks fine. It's white. The background fabric is plain white. It works. And then to kind of add more of a snowy feel, I glued the teeny tiniest Swarovski flatback crystals to the background. You know, I have those. I buy them from Fire Mountain Gems, and I buy them by the gross because I use them in a lot of projects. And then on the tree itself, I have chain, and I have some miscellaneous beads. I have more Swarovski crystals. I have sequins. Just all sorts of stuff I had around. But, you know, I could have really gone a lot further than I did. And, I mean, I have boxes and boxes of stuff I could have sewn to this little Christmas tree. But it is just a little tree. It's only, I think, 7 inches tall. So you don't want to kind of encrust it too much. Although you sure could. Be glitzy. Just do what you'd like. And then under the tree, I just used different scraps of batik to make my presents under the tree. And I used scraps of ribbon and a few beads here and there to make my presents. And the back, I can't remember if I explained when I talked about the meowing at the moon quilt, but I use these little, I take a square of two squares of fabric and I fold them in half into triangles and I attach them to the upper corners of the back of my small quilts. This will not work on a really big quilt. It's only for little art quilt type quilts. And then you sew them on when you're sewing your binding on and you slip a dowel in there. Or in my case, I have a lot of chopsticks because we eat a lot of Chinese food. And I cut the chopstick just using scissors and made it to fit. So there's instructions on the project sheet on how to go about doing that. So I hope you give that one a try. And you know, if you listen to the podcast before Christmas, even Christmas Eve, you could probably throw one together pretty quickly. So I hope you do make this. I think that you'll have a good time if you give it a try and decorate it to your heart's content. Stay tuned for the paper arts segment. Today's topic is how to make a three-dimensional card featuring a poinsettia. Welcome back to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and in today's paper arts segment, we're making a three-dimensional poinsettia card. You can find complete instructions on the website mirkwooddesigns.com. You know, I got the idea for this card. This is the same night that I woke up with the idea of making the bejeweled Christmas tree, I also woke up with the idea of making the poinsettia card. I made this card, or a very similar one, for my Christmas cards probably, I think it was about 4 years ago. And my house was a mess because I hand cut everything. And I send out about 60 cards every year. So if you look at the project sheet and see what I mean about having red paper all over the house, you'll know what I mean. Because I had to cut out every petal by hand. And that sounds like an onerous task, but it's such an effective card and so beautiful and unique. I think that it's really worth the effort. But anyway, this I had flashbacks when I was making the sample card yesterday and getting ready to take pictures of it. I had red paper all over my living room and yellow paper and white paper as I was working on this card. But it's such a pretty card. Give it a chance. Anyway, the poinsettia is a traditional Christmas flower, and there is a legend of how this happened. Now I got this information, I can't remember, on the web somewhere. I've heard this several different versions of this particular story, but this is the one I'll read to you. The legend of the poinsettia comes from Mexico. It tells of a girl named Maria and her little brother Pablo. They were very poor, but always looked forward to the Christmas festival. Each year, a large manger scene was set up in the village church, and the days before Christmas were filled with parades and parties. The two children loved Christmas, but were always saddened because they had no money to buy presents. They especially wished that they could give something to the church for the baby Jesus, but they had nothing. One Christmas Eve, Maria and Pablo set out for church to attend the service. On their way, they picked some weeds growing along the roadside and decided to take them as their gift to the baby Jesus in the manger scene. Of course, they were teased by other children when they arrived with their gift, but they said nothing, for they knew that they had given what they could. Maria and Pablo began placing the green plants around the manger, and miraculously, the green top leaves turned into bright red petals, and soon the manger was surrounded by beautiful star-like flowers, and so we see them today. I really love poinsettias. You know, I just mentioned in the last segment that I, or actually in the introduction, that I sang for my friend's funeral 2 weeks ago. And a week after the funeral, I received from a florist the most magnificent poinsettia I have ever seen in my life. I am not kidding when I tell you that the diameter of this poinsettia plant is 3 feet across. I can't even get it through the doorway without it touching both sides of the door. This is the most magnificent plant I have ever seen, and it was so kind of the family to send this as a thank you to me. You know, my mom and dad always planted the poinsettias that they received as gifts on their lanai on Marco Island in Florida. Poinsettias grow really well down there, and every winter, sure enough, the flowers would green leaves would turn red. And they were so beautiful when you'd go down there and you'd see these poinsettias. So poinsettias have a soft spot in my heart, and I'm happy to share my poinsettia card project with you. Now remember that poinsettias grow not only in red, but also in pink and green, but you know that I'm a purist, so I've always made mine in red, my cards in red. The website shows the various process steps. There aren't that many. Basically, you'll print the template out and you'll trace it onto red and yellow and white cardstock. Or you can also print them directly onto cardstock, but you'll end up wasting a little bit if you do that. If you follow the instructions on the project sheet, there really aren't any secrets or any tricks to making this card, and I think you'll be really surprised at how pretty and effective it is. And you can actually use the same technique to make a variety of other flowers that open. I've made daisies, I've made much more ornate flowers, I've made simpler flowers using fewer petals and fewer layers, or even more layers. You'll see the technique and you'll say, I can change this to suit whatever project I would like. You can use them in the summer and make sunflowers. You can use them at Easter time with Easter colors. Just be creative and make it your own. Also, I do need to warn you that when you make these cards, you want to check with your post office to determine the correct postage, because the card is bulky. I'm quite sure you'll have to pay that surcharge for making a thicker card. And also, you might want to ask if they can hand cancel it, because if you've got that kind of lump in the middle where the ribbon is that ties the flower closed to send it, that could catch on the postal meter, and you don't want your envelope being ripped and your card being destroyed. You could also use just the flower and the ribbon as a gift tag. You don't even have to attach it to a card. You can attach it to your gift, and on the center circle, write the recipient's name. Again, you'll find complete instructions and photos on my site, mirkwooddesigns.com. Up next is the recipe segment. Today, we're making snowball cookies, which were one of my favorite Christmas cookies when I was growing up. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon Zaroff, and this is the recipe segment. Today, I'm offering my family's recipe for snowball cookies. My mom made these cookies ever since I can remember. I remember her smashing the walnuts with a hammer on our breakfast room table. Now, I admit that I buy the nuts already shelled. For a long time, I preferred to use pecans because they're sweeter, but as I've aged, I've learned to revert to my mom's nut of choice, which is walnuts. Now, when you grind the nuts, don't make them really fine. You don't want nut meal, but you want chopped nuts. So you could actually use a nut chopper, which is what my mom used to use, rather than a food processor. I use a food processor, but you really have to monitor If you're chopping your nuts in a food processor, you need to make sure you pulse it and don't just run the food processor, because you will end up with nut meal, which is perfectly fine for certain recipes. But for this recipe, you still want very, very slightly chunky nuts. On my website, you will find pictures of the process of making these cookies. And also, don't forget that you can download the recipe at mirkwooddesigns.com. My recipe specifically calls for butter and also for walnuts, but you know that you're always able to use margarine rather than butter, and you can use any kind of nut that you like. I like walnuts, but you might want to go with pecans, or you could also use macadamia nuts. Now, as far as margarine versus butter, I did some experimenting, and if you need your cookies to be able to hold up to travel, or you like your cookies a little bit firmer, you should use margarine rather than butter. Butter tends to make your cookies very tender, and that's my preference. And I also think, in all honesty, that butter is actually healthier for you than margarine is. But if you prefer to use margarine, your cookies will have a little bit more substance to them. And if you're mailing them, for example, they'll hold up a little bit better to jostling about in the mail. Up next is the grab bag. This time, I'm going to share a Christmas song that I wrote when I was 15 years old, and I'll also share some Christmas memories. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon Zaroff, and this is The Grab Bag. This time I'm going to talk about family Christmas traditions, musical memories, and I'll share with you a song I wrote when I was just a young thing of 15 years old. When I was in grade school, our teacher asked us what our family Christmas traditions were, and I kind of didn't understand the question. I didn't know that people celebrated the holiday in different ways. So I said we didn't have any traditions. And the teacher probably realized my confusion, and she sort of started asking questions. Well, what do you eat? Do you go to church? And what songs do you sing? And that made me understand what traditions were. And indeed, we had very specific things that we did when we were growing up. We always opened our presents, for example, on Christmas Eve. Us children would have to go upstairs or to the basement or somewhere else for a period of time. And while we were out of the room, Santa would come. And oh darn, we'd always just miss Santa. But there would be the presents under the tree. And on Christmas Eve, we opened our gifts. And I remember attending Mass. I can't remember when I was really little attending midnight Mass, but when I joined choir, children's choir, obviously didn't sing for midnight Mass because it was too late, but we would sing for Mass on Christmas Day. And then as an adult, when I joined a choir, or actually when I was a teenager and joined a choir, we did sing for midnight Mass, and I still sing for midnight Mass today. And actually, I'm usually the cantor, and this year I will be singing a duet with my son. We will be singing the Coventry Carol, which you've been enjoying in the bumper music. As a matter of fact, he and I were actually going to record the Coventry Carol to share with you, but because I had my cold and I had no voice, the 2 weekends that he was home recently, I was unable to practice with him and unable to do the recording. So maybe next year you get a chance to hear his lovely voice. Anyway, one of the traditions that my little family celebrates is the pickle present. Probably you're not familiar with this. If you're German, perhaps you are. We have a blown glass ornament that's in the shape of a pickle. And every night, Christmas Eve, I should say, Santa comes to our house and he does 3 things. Number one, he eats the cookies that we leave out for him. Number two, he puts baby Jesus in the manger. And number three, he puts the pickle ornament on the tree. Now, Christmas morning, whoever is the first person to find the hidden pickle ornament on the tree gets a special present. Now, coincidences of coincidences. I'm not sure if I said that right, but whatever the deal. Coincidentally, my son Teddy always finds the pickle present. So the pickle present is usually something like, well, when he was little, a Lego set. This year, I don't think he'll be listening to the podcast, but it's his very, very favorite movie, the DVD of the movie Amelie, which is a lovely little French movie. And he loves this movie. He watches it over and over. And now he doesn't have to borrow it anymore. He will own his own copy. He loves the movie so much, he actually owns the soundtrack to it. Okay, so we always leave Christmas and carrots out for Santa and his reindeer. I always sing for Midnight Mass and Christmas morning. Now, my husband works for the state of Michigan. Okay, I'll share with you. He's a prison guard. Now, prisoners need to be guarded 24 hours a day, and his shift happens to be the night shift, which means he's never home at night. And it also means because of his weird schedule and prisoners need to be guarded 24 hours a day, he often has to work holidays. And he can't get that many days off, if he asks for vacation, because a lot of people have more seniority than he does. He can't get holidays off. Anyway, so consequently, Christmas Eve, he's never home. Christmas Day, he always has to sleep to get ready to work that night. So we have this little tiny window of opportunity when I make a nice brunch and I make mimosas, which if you're not familiar with a mimosa, it's a combination of champagne and orange juice. And it's so nice to sit and have, well, Teddy has hot chocolate and Ted and I have mimosas. And that's when we open our gifts, is Christmas, when Ted wakes up from his first sleep. He sleeps in two shifts because of his weird work schedule. And he usually sleeps until 2 in the afternoon. And when he wakes up, we have mimosas and we open our gifts. So that's our little family tradition. Most of my early Christmas memories, and actually all of my memories around Christmas, center on music, because I've sung as long as I can remember. I've always been in children's choirs. The very first guitar that my family received was for Christmas. And that was when I was 10 years old. And that summer, my brother, who is 12 years older than I am and who was in the seminary at the time, he was learning to play guitar, and he got me interested to learn how to play the guitar. And I was really the only one in my family who was living at home at the time who picked up the family guitar, which was a very inexpensive, cheap, red, plywood probably, Decca guitar. This guitar was pretty pitiful, but it was enough to get me interested in playing the guitar. So that was when I was 10 years old. So for my 11th Christmas, because I had shown so much promise, I got my first good guitar. I got a beautiful classical guitar, which I don't have any longer. I have another classical guitar. But this guitar I actually named, and someone reminded me of it recently. I think that the name of the guitar was Pancho Segovia. That sticks in my mind. My brother is a classical guitarist, and he taught me to play classical music, and Andre Segovia was a very famous classical guitarist, and I think that's where I got the name from. And it was a kind of a Spanish style classical guitar, so that's why I got the name Pancho Segovia. A couple years later, because I turned out to be a folk musician, I really enjoyed singing folk songs. This was back in the mid-60s when Peter, Paul, and Mary were so popular and all. I received my first auto harp, and I still play my auto harp today, and sometime I'll record a song and you can hear me play the auto harp. And one year, in the early 80s, I was singing professionally, and my voice was probably at its best at that time, and I decided to record a family Christmas album. So I took all of my favorite Christmas songs, and I had a little mini recording studio in my house, and I spent a lot of time perfecting the recording process back then. And one of the things that we did have was my family, one Christmas Eve, singing the 12 Days of Christmas. And now my parents are both gone, but on this recording, you hear my dad singing the verse, Five Gold Rings, and I don't remember my mom's verse, but it's so wonderful to go back and listen to this recording. I'm so thankful that somebody had a little tape recorder and recorded my silly family singing 12 Days of Christmas, one Christmas Eve, and we still have the recording to this day. So I put that recording on my Christmas album. And maybe sometime down the road in a couple years, I'll share that recording of the 12 Days of Christmas with you. It probably won't mean as much to you, but I hope it encourages you to kind of record your family memories, because remember, you can't relive these except in your mind, and you can't share them unless you have a recording or pictures or movies. So really take time to catalog all of your family's treasured memories and your traditions. It's so important at this time of year in particular, when we have so many very special things that we do as families. Anyway, I've written a lot of songs over the years, but the only song I think that's actually good is something I wrote for Christmas called Lullaby. I wrote this, I believe, when I was about 15 years old, and the song is sung from the point of view of Mary, which is, you know, Jesus's mother, and this is one of Teddy's favorite songs, and he's the one who told me that I needed to share it with you. So here is my song that I wrote called Lullaby.
Sleep, my little one, sleep and dream of the beauty around you, 'cause the sun's going down and the nighttime is coming around. Don't cry, my darling, Mama's here and I'll always be near. I won't go away. Forever we'll start with today. Dream of the things you know, of the life I remember so long ago. Be free while you can, for soon you'll become a man. I know, my baby, life is hard and the world may be cruel. Good times are few, but the world will belong to you. Dream of the things you know, of the life I remember so long ago. Be free while you can, for you are the son of man. Sleep, my little one, sleep and dream of the beauty around you, 'cause the sun's going down and the nighttime is coming.
Well, it makes me glad that I finally got my voice back. I just recorded that just before I began recording my podcast, and today's December 17th, and my voice, I think, is finally back to almost normal. Well, I want to wish everyone a very blessed Christmas, and the next time I talk to you, I hope, unless I get sick again, it should be just about New Year's Eve, and I will have some interesting New Year's stories to share with you. I want to thank you for listening today, and I hope you continue to listen. I'd really appreciate it if you went to iTunes and gave my podcast a rating. It's so important to those of us out in podcast land to get feedback so we can improve and give you, our faithful listeners, what you want. Also, you can email me or post comments on my blog to let me know what's on your mind. My email address is ruthann@mirkwooddesigns.com. Ruthann is spelled R-U-T-H-A-N-N. I hope to hear from you, even if it's just to say hi. That way, I know that someone is actually out there listening. And please consider sending me photos of projects you've made using my templates or patterns so I can start a Mirkwood Designs online gallery. I need proof that people are actually listening and appreciating my little podcast. You can find links to my podcasts, show notes, projects, and much more on my website, mirkwooddesigns.com. That's mirkwooddesigns.com. By the way, if you've missed a project, tutorial, or recipe, you can always go to my blog, and along the right-hand column, there are links to both my projects page and my recipes page. Click on those to go directly to all of my projects, tutorials, and recipes without having to sift through my entire blog. Until next time, have a very Merry Christmas. This is Ruthann Logsdon-Zeroff with Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. And remember, creativity isn't a race, it's an adventure.